is Susie Nanny, and I've actually altered my title a little bit from the presentation published. It, as my thinking has advanced in the topic, but is sharing the same results with you. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors with the Utah Department of Health. These collaborations between academics and the State Health Department and State Office of Education in this case are just critical to examining these larger state-level databases, and so acknowledging my co-authors from the Utah Department of Health is important. As mentioned previously, there is a real consensus that improvements in the school's nutrition and physical activity policies are needed. You know, from on the national or federal level, from Healthy People 2010 to experts in pediatrics and dietitians to other experts at the Institutes of Medicine, really a general consensus that this is the place, one of the many places to make a difference. Many have provided policy recommendations and strategies for schools, starting back in the 1996 and 1997 with the Centers for Disease Control, the School Nutrition Association, School National Alliance for Nutrition and Activity, the National Governors Association, the School Board Association, even the food industry has weighed in on the issue and telling schools what you could be doing in terms of policy recommendations and strategies to improve these environments. These strategies in general are based upon varying degrees of evidence and are a result of trend data. For example, trend data about walking to school and how that's declined from the 70s to 2001 from 25% down to 13%. This evidence comes from national consensus reports on the best available evidence, but again, the best that we have to date. National trials like the CATCH trials are what we have that makes up this best available evidence. In general, nutrition and physical activity organizations agree that students should have equal access to a healthy food and activity environment, regardless of a variety of indicators, but regardless of socioeconomic status, is what I'd like to point out. So that's a no-brainer. We all agree that regardless of someone's circumstances, that we shouldn't offer them this healthy environment for which to learn and grow. Despite that, the consensus, studies show that there are great disparities in schools, and I've got about three studies here that I'm just mentioning as a part of the background. Schools, for example, in Mississippi identified that serving a higher proportion of lower socioeconomic status children had an increased calories from the school lunch program. Researchers in other countries, New Zealand and England, had identified poorer school meal, overall school meal nutrient profiles based upon socioeconomic status. And in again, depending on socioeconomic status, that there were fewer healthier food in advertisements, so salad posters and advertisements for healthier foods in these schools with representing children of a lower socioeconomic status. Therefore, the purpose of the work that I'm presenting today is to examine whether school nutrition and physical activity policies differ by schools serving more students eligible for free and reduced lunch prices and by geographic location. This is a cross-sectional study, a secondary data analysis, using the 2006 School Health Profiles Principal Questionnaire for the state of Utah. And the School Health Profiles Questionnaire, there's actually a few of them, but most states have been using or distributing this questionnaire on a biannual basis since 1996. So every 2 years, many of our states are implementing this for not only to capture school policies around physical activity and nutrition, but violence prevention, HIV prevention, lots of tobacco use and policies by school. So it's really a CDC-sponsored questionnaire. They've developed it and have really developed the methodology and the questionnaire and have been kind of helping states use this as a monitoring tool in a variety of areas. I'm just sharing with you today the physical activity and nutrition data for the state of Utah. This questionnaire, the 2006, was administered in spring of 2006, and that's important to mention, and I'll come back to that, that this is pre-wellness policy. This is pre-USDA school wellness policy initiative that I want to share the results today with you. Forgive the busy slide, and at the end of the presentation, this data is just accepted for publication. I'll give you that reference in my email that you could, because I know I have a lot of references here that I'd love to share if you want to email me. These are the questions that I looked at that were from the school health profile questionnaire. In the right-hand column identifies the policy recommendation from a variety of institutions, as I mentioned, CDC, School Nutrition Association, Action for Healthy Kids, Institutes of Medicine, and so on. So the first question is, how long do students usually have to eat lunch once they're seated? Less than 20 minutes, 20 minutes or more. Has the school adopted a policy saying that if foods served at student parties, after school, or extended day programs or concession stands, fruits or vegetables be among those that are offered? Can students purchase each snack food or beverage from vending machines or at the school store, canteen, or snack bar? And this is a list of the healthy options that the principal would select whether they offer these or not. The salty snacks that are low in fat, such as pretzels and baked chips, the low-fat cookies and pastries, fruits and vegetables, 100% fruit juice, bottled water, and 1% or skim milk. Next, can students purchase candy, snacks that are not low in fat, like soda pops, sports drinks, fruit drinks, or 2% or whole milk during, and I'm mostly interested during the school lunch period, so we'll get a look at how schools responded to that. And does the school offer opportunities for students to participate intramural? So on the activity side, does schools offer opportunities for students to participate in intramural activities or physical activity clubs? And if so, do you provide transportation to them? And then finally, does your school support or promote walking or biking to and from school? So we have data or results from 209 principals from the state of Utah. This represents an 82% response rate, and these are secondary principals, so middle school and high school, where 38 of our 40 districts were represented in this data set. Not routinely collected as a part of the school health profile questionnaire are free or reduced lunch price school lunch enrollment or geographic location. And so that was where our partnership really worked well, because they had, of course, the state health department had the data, and I wanted to add these variables to the data. Did the data set to answer my research question. And it was they were really sensitive that we didn't lose the confidentiality associated with that questionnaire. So instead of adding actual values, free and reduced price lunch eligibility, which is available, public access knowledge available for all of our states via the office of our Department of Education for all of our states. In fact, I called them, they sent me a CD where I could look for any year that I wanted, where I could add it, we could add it to the data set. But in order to maintain confidentiality, which is real important to the state health department, understandably, instead of actually adding the actual value of in that state, it's 0 to 72% of eligible for free or reduced lunch enrollment. We created tertiles from the 0 to 72% and characterized the school as being low, medium, or high enrollment. Similarly, with geographic location, this is data that's open access by the State Office of Education, and so it was easy to categorize schools as urban, suburban, and rural, and as you see, we have a nice variety, 40% urban, 30% suburban, and 30% rural. This slide here has, on the left-hand side, the nutrition-related policies that I mentioned earlier, and then on the right-hand side, we have the low free and reduced lunch enrollment, the medium free and reduced lunch enrollment, and the high. And we'll just take it line by line. Students that have 20 minutes or more to eat lunch, so that's really what we want schools to strive for. students, they have 20 minutes or more to eat their lunch. We see that there are no differences, no significant differences by low, medium, or high reduced lunch schools. They all, anywhere from 87 to 91% of the schools did provide that. Fruit and vegetables are available at all school-sponsored events. Well, there were no significant differences by free and reduced lunch enrollment, but what we can take from this is that woefully low, 18% to 24% of those schools, principals responded that they have fruits and vegetables at all school-sponsored events as a part of policy for that school. Can students purchase from vending machines the following healthy snacks? And we start to see some significant differences here. Salty snacks that are low in fat. Those schools that I'll term the higher income schools, because they have a lower participation in free and reduced lunch enrollment, 97% of those said, yes, we offer low fat salty snacks. Whereas 87% of the medium eligibility schools said they did, and a lower 76% of the high free and reduced lunch enrollment schools. So as a marker of poverty, or the poorer schools represented by the high enrollment and free and reduced lunch priced lunches were much less likely to offer low-fat salty snacks. They were much less likely to offer low-fat baked goods than their richer counterparts in terms of schools. Fruits and vegetables, there were no significant differences in that, or 100% fruit juice, although it was just low. Bottled water, all 90% or more of the schools offer bottled water, regardless of their income status. This one was probably the one that troubled me the most. Students can purchase candy snacks that are not low in fat, like soda pops, sports drinks, fruit drinks, or 2% or whole milk during the school lunch period, and there's a significant difference. Those marked by poverty in terms of being highest eligibility schools that represent those with the highest enrollment for free and reduced lunch, that's 28% were most said yes, we keep that open during lunchtime, whereas 8 and 9% of the low enrollment or medium enrollment schools offered that. So we see a real clear trend here in terms of as a marker for poverty, the high free and reduced lunch eligibility had poor availability in terms of healthful snacks. And this, again, is the competitive food environment. In terms of geographic location, so we have our same questions, our nutrition-related questions on the left-hand side, but we look at things in terms of urban, suburban, and rural, and this is, again, something that's predetermined by the State Office of Education. They characterize the schools in this regard. Students have 20 minutes or more to eat their lunch. We see that the rural locations were significantly more likely to say, yes, we allow our students ample time to each eat their lunch. Fruits and vegetables, we didn't see any difference in terms of urban, suburban, and rural. Again, woefully low. Here we're starting to see some differences in terms of the low-fat, salty snacks, where only 40% of the rural schools versus in the 95 or better urban and suburban schools were likely to do so. Low-fat baked goods, we didn't see any statistically significant differences, although the numbers are heading that way. Fruits or vegetables, again, we didn't see any difference, but in 100% fruit juice, we saw a difference where rural schools were much less likely to offer 100% fruit or vegetable juice. And bottled water, all about the same. 1% are skim milk, so an opportunity to establish healthy dietary patterns in terms of skim or 1% milk, low-fat milks, we saw a significant difference where rural schools were much less likely to offer that compared to suburban and urban. Students can purchase the junk foods during the lunch period. We didn't see a significant difference, but it was certainly approaching that in terms of geographic locations. So all in all, in terms of the previous slide in terms of free and reduced lunch enrollment, the schools marked by poverty in terms of high free and reduced lunch enrollment were five times less likely to be offering the healthy competitive foods. And in terms of the geographic locations, rural schools were 3 times less likely to be offering these opportunities than their urban and suburban counterparts. Look at a couple of our physical activity questions that were on our school health profile questionnaire. Offers intramural activities or physical activity clubs. We saw a significant difference that those in representing schools of high and free and reduced lunch enrollment were much less likely to offer intramural activities or physical activity clubs. That's 62% versus 71 and 82%. Offer transportation. That's kind of a given. Actually went in the opposite direction. Those rules, so if they didn't offer the intramural activities or clubs, it stands to reason that they also wouldn't be providing transportation to those, but there was a significant difference. And then promote walking or biking to and from school. There were no significant differences. Anywhere from 59 to 60% of schools offered that. In terms of urban, suburban, and rural locations, rural schools were the least likely to offer the intramural activities or physical activity clubs, and they were the least likely to promote walking or biking to and from school compared to their urban and suburban counterpart schools. So in summary, school districts with the highest free and reduced price lunch enrollment and those rurally located offer fewer healthy food and drink choices. It needs to be mentioned, I didn't present the data here, but they also offered the fewest unhealthy choices. So a part of the school health profile is not only those 8, did you offer water and skim milk and 100% fruit juice. We also, as you saw with the kind of the junk food list, the soda pop and the higher fat milks and the regular fat baked goods, the rural and the high free and reduced lunch enrollment schools were much less likely to offer them as well, which was, so they have fewer choices altogether, I guess is how I would sum it up. But I don't even know how I feel about that. It was an interesting finding. School districts with the highest free and reduced lunch enrollment and rurally located also offered fewer physical activity programs. So really, at a time when we want students to be establishing these healthy patterns and schools being one avenue to do that, there seems to be this disparity among, at least in the schools in Utah. The limitations of this work, this is self-report data, so the principals of these respective schools filled this out, and we didn't go back and do any truth checking to see if that in fact was the true answer. I also used district level indicators, and in hindsight, so let's say one school district had 20 schools, I did use the district level free and reduced lunch enrollment, where clearly there's some widespread amongst schools within a district. In hindsight, we absolutely should have used that school level data. And then also we use select policies, although I think it's a comprehensive list of policies, although I guess we certainly could argue physical activity policies, there would be more to look at. Select policies based upon the secondary data analysis from the school health profile data. The take-home message is that these results are pre-USDA wellness policy initiative. So this was data was collected in the spring of 2006, although we were hopeful that there were a lot of discussions around policies and policies were being developed for that next school year. These are kind of baseline data, and I'm really excited to get my hands on the 2008 data and really take a look at this. The extent, and my overall message here, is the extent to which this unfunded mandate will impact the health disparities, schools in terms of health disparities needs to be evaluated. And not to leave us on a negative note here, I have actually collected all of the school wellness policy initiative policies in the state of Utah and actually saw the opposite direction. Those schools with the highest free and reduced lunch enrollment have significantly more strong language mandatory policies than their counterparts. They had a longer way to go, but they had significantly more mandatory strong language policies. So I thought that was definitely some good news. like to acknowledge my some folks from the CDC, the Division of Adolescence and School Health, who helped me frame this work in identifying my liaisons in the State Health Department, and were crucial in looking at the state-level data. The manuscript was just last week accepted and is in, by the journal, the American Dietetic Association, and the National Cancer Institute funded this work. Got my email there. I'd be happy to email the paper, which has the references. There was a lot of small print. I'd be happy to email that and take questions at this time. Do you know that? Actually, we saw urban tended to fare better than suburban. I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri. We'd have seen the opposite in St. Louis, Missouri. And so Salt Lake City, Utah, of course, is where this data was collected. But we definitely saw that the urban schools fared better than the suburban. Not in all areas, it was just in really in a few where the rural really stuck out. But it was opposite. You know, it was just another reminder that, you know, these general phrases we make about urban or rural, they really don't hold up. I've seen it now in a couple states. Other questions? No, but that would be something. So this is secondary data analysis, but that was something that... No, I guess we couldn't add it. I'm trying to think of how I would even add that to the data set. So the question is distance traveled. Were we able to capture that to really even see differences among the rural, even wider gaps within the rural populations? Well, there was the question about transportation. If you offer those activities, part A, if you answered yes, part B is do you offer transportation? So in the terms of the walking and biking in schools, that makes a lot of sense to me that you wouldn't promote walking and biking. In my limited scope of things, it makes a little more sense. But in terms of the after school or other activities, the second part of that question is, do you provide transportation? But you're right, the distance traveled is longer and there's a lot more logistics. But a lot of things to work out in that area. So it wasn't even reasonable, which makes us think then, a limitation is that the questions, we really should expand the scope of those questions to be more reasonable to those rural communities. Other questions? Thank you.